The presenting sponsor of Top Docs is Netflix, now presenting the documentary series Escaping Twin Flames. From Emmy nominee Cecilia Peck, this three-part documentary series pulls back the veil on Twin Flames universe, a controversial online community that preys on people looking for love. Den of Geek says it tackles one of the more interesting subjects that streaming has in some time. Escaping Twin Flames is available now on Netflix. Hey folks, this is Mike. You're about to hear a discussion between my partner in Top Docs, Ken Jacobson, and Clayton Davis, who's senior awards editor at Variety. They'll be breaking down the Oscar race for Best Documentary Feature and Best Documentary Short for the 96th Academy Awards, which we held on March 10th. I wasn't able to join Ken and Clayton this year, but it's always great to hear what Clayton has to say. He has a lot of insight into how films might win an Oscar. And he also has a deep historical knowledge that he brings to bear in surprising ways often. Clayton also gives us some insight into some films he would have liked seen in the top five of these two categories. We have conversations with all the documentary nominees. We also have pods with pretty much all the current other films that Clayton mentions. In the show notes, we'll list all the films. So this is a fun one. Please do listen. Coming right up, Ken Jacobson speaks with Clayton Davis about the Oscars race for Best Documentary Feature and Best Documentary Short.
Hi, I'm Ken Jacobson, and welcome to Top Docs. Clayton Davis, welcome back to Top Docs.
Ken Jacobson, thanks for having me. I love this time of the year because it's when I get a Ken email that says, come on in and chat with me.
Absolutely.
That's when I know it's almost over.
Yeah, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah.
Ken comes, it's good.
Well, thanks for doing this. I really enjoy talking to you and I learn a lot. So this is definitely an interesting year. But before we jump in and talk about the nominees for Best Documentary Feature and Short, we'll mostly talk about the features, but we'll touch on the shorts. But before we do that, I just wanted to note for the audience the timing of this conversation. We are talking on Monday, February 26th. The Oscar voting is underway. It began on Thursday, the 22nd, and it closes tomorrow afternoon. 2 days ago, on Saturday, midway through the voting period, it was announced that Netflix acquired the rights to Nisha Pahuja's To Kill a Tiger, which is one of the five nominees in the feature doc category. So I'll be curious to hear whether you think that impacts the race at all, but before we talk about all those films and your favorites, just curious what your immediate reaction to that news was.
Weirdly, it solidified something that I haven't written about yet, so you're getting a little scoop here. I speak to a lot of Academy voters right before voting, especially during voting. I speak to them today, speak to them again later, tomorrow. And based on my tracking of like talking to people, To Kill a Tiger, I argue is number two in the category. I think it's a lot closer than people think. And I imagine this is me putting a speculative hat on. I don't know this for sure, but I think Netflix probably knows that too. And then was like, you know what? I'll take the runner up with that. Or maybe it's the one that spoils it in the end that actually does win. Because we have five documentaries that are pretty heavy this year. They got to take their pick, and that was the one that was up for grabs.
That's right. It did not have U.S. distribution, so now it does. We will get into all five in a moment, but before we get to the nominees, we have to have our annual clarification about who votes for what. So the Academy's Doc Branch this year voted from among 167 eligible films to choose the 15 films named to the Oscar shortlist. This is in the feature category. And then they voted from among that list to choose the five Oscar nominees that we're going to talk about today. Once those five have been chosen, the full Academy membership can vote on the winner from among the five nominees.
You said that so clear and perfect. I would have jumbled that. So thank you for that. Can I say, and this is like my one disclaimer / poo-poo thing that I'm going to do this entire time. It's going to be strictly positive from here. I know a lot of flack has been given to the doc branch for their selections this year. And I think what we are seeing, and this is just, again, a little bit of speculation, but more rooted in fact, the Academy has diversified incredibly since 2015, since Oscar's So White. And I wanted them to diversify, and they did that, obviously. I believe when you look at the Oscars, especially 2020 on, like that's where I really started to see it. I can see the representation of every bit of the Academy and its nominations across the board. I see where the old people voted. I see where the young people voted. I see where the international made a statement. I saw where the Americans made a statement and so forth. But what people may not know that in this time, since they've diversified, the doc branch has added the most amount of international members. Some argue maybe it tilted too much now in its favor because of the films that they keep on snubbing for their documentary feature award and based on what has been traditionally chosen and left off in the past. Last year when we spoke, Goodnight Oppie didn't make the shortlist. My general opinion, an embarrassment. I loved Goodnight Oppie. It's a great film. For it to not make the shortlist, and now listen, the branch is the branch. You can do whatever you want, right? I don't need people to like the movies that I like. But in 2020, especially, there were 238 documentaries submitted for eligibility that year. Inarguably, a documentary filmmaker is the hardest working person in the Hollywood business. They work on documentaries for years, for decades. Hoop dreams. Like they're working on stuff forever. They're not watching 238 movies. They're just not. So the change that I have been advocating for is like what happens in an animated feature, an international feature, allow the members of all branches to opt in to vote on the category. I think without doing that, we will never see the dream that I long for, and I think you do as well, Ken, to see a documentary feature nominated for Best Picture. That will not happen if we still keep it safeguarded and think, as a documentary filmmaker, a lot of doctors feel this way, only we can judge docs. We know what docs are about. But then, like, they're becoming very predictable, and I know what they don't like. That's when I knew The Rescue was getting left off. I was like, they hate recreations, and they don't like Cradle of Grave music docs a lot of the time. I knew still Michael J. Fox movie was getting snubbed a mile away. As soon as he got nominated for an Emmy, I knew it was over, no matter what they did. That's a separate thing from this, but I think that is the biggest change that's needed. So either you need to balance out the branch again, which I'm not saying go invite Americans over there. I don't want to say that, but I think you just need to allow people to opt in. Because I think, as you see, it does skew very international. And I'm not saying that you need American movies in there every time. I just think now, looking at the past 2 years, it shows that, okay, a branch's taste, this overwhelming taste that's taking over. And that's based on the last 2 years that we've seen.
So opt in.
Because I'm telling you, we're never going to see a doc feature has not been nominated for Best Picture yet. It's the only thing of the separated categories, quote unquote, right? We've had animated movies nominated for Best Picture. We've had international movies nominated for Best Picture. We had one non-English language title win Best Picture, but we haven't had a doc yet. And I really don't know if we've ever come close. And when I started at Variety, September 2020, I had four things I said I needed to be here for. And I knew of the job I had here. And one of them was to see the first documentary nominated for Best Picture. I'm going to be here to see it. So I'm going to keep advocating for that.
All right. Thank you. Opt in.
All right. That's my soapbox is done.
What's interesting, though, about the internationalization, if you want to call it that, of the feature category this year, is to look at the short category, which those, by contrast, were heavily weighted toward American directors and American stories.
You know what's interesting about this? The shorts collectively have been rough the past few years, just like animated, documentary, live action. I was hearing this early on pre-shortlist. The live action shorts especially were really hard for a lot of members to get through. They said they were like heavy or they weren't good. People were really struggling with them. By far, by miles, the doc short is the best of the shorts and had the best lineup. Like every movie there is at minimum good. I don't think there are greats there. And I think there are great shorts that exist. And I love the shorts categories because that's where you see the birth of a filmmaker, you see diversity. I'm always going to advocate for the shorts, But I want them to do a better job of educating the public on what these are. Because all they are right now, and Doc Short, people, you're listening to me right now, you know I don't feel this way. But right now, they are the bathroom breaks during the show and whether or not you win your Oscar. There are those two things right now to the general public. And they shouldn't be. So I want people to be able to see these. But looking at the Doc Shorts, collectively, all really great emotional films. Timely, ABC's book banning. Talk about a moment to just present yourself. Hello. And a lot of doc feature and documentary in general. And I believe this actually generally about the entire Academy Awards. They're a reflection of the time. And what wins reflects the time that we are in collectively as humans. I would say that How Green Was My Valley beat Citizen Kane because Pearl Harbor gets bombed 3 months before the ceremony. And people were looking to like not be bummed out. They were looking for something to be happy for. I think Coda wins Best Picture its year because 3 days before the SAG Awards, Ukraine got bombed and everyone was staring at them and said, we could be happy about something. ABC's A Book Banning could be a real spoiler here alongside The Last Repair Shop. Ben Proudfoot, who won this category two years ago, and Chris Bowers, which I feel bad for because they lost together the year before with a concerto is a conversation, which I love so much. That's a great short if anyone hasn't seen it. Then the next year, Ben goes off by himself, wins an Oscar, and him and Chris are back together now. I hope they finally win together. But those are the two, I think, big front runners.
And let's just maybe mention the other three.
Barbara Little Rock, which I actually did an interview here at Variety, moderated a conversation if anyone wants to catch that. Another timely one, looking at one man's quest to generate generational wealth in the Black community, something that's very near and dear to me and something that I think anyone needs to see. Nainai and Weipo, I think I'm saying this right, I'm probably not, but it's just one of those good, feel good, warms your heart, touch your chest. They have the two grandmas at the nominees luncheon that was just delightful, and to see them like live and in 3D was just bonkers. And then you have Island in Between, which the New York Times op docs, and it's reflecting the relationship with Taiwan, the United States, and China. Also very timely, depending on kind of what side of the aisle you're on in terms of like how dire this situation is to you personally. But I think it's between ABC's Book Banning and Last Repair Shop. And I actually am leaning towards Repair Shop at the moment. I think power of LA Times, Home Field Advantage, Searchlight Pictures, that's Disney behind them. And again, talking about the joy of music, joy of art, what's going to speak to an Academy member more so than talking about how art is needed.
Just a quick note about the ABC's A Book Banning. It is directed by Sheila Nevins, the legendary HBO's Sheila Nevins, who's now
was retiring.
MTV, and here she's directed a film. Could this be a spoiler factor?
That could be the difference between it winning and not winning. I think you have to ask how close it is between those two, because actually the shorts generally have been the most abstained for on ballots when I talk to members, because people don't put in the time to watch the shorts. Especially if you're a longer short. Last Repair Shop is 39 minutes. ABC's Book Banning is 27 minutes. They do like shorter shorts, so they may jump on that. But Island in Between, I believe, though, Nainai is the shortest one at 17 minutes. So that also could help. Another Disney split, maybe.
All right. So The Last Repair Shop is your pick. And
that's my
we
pick.
Will also watch runtimes when we get to the features. Before we talk about the feature nominees, I wanted to get your brief take on what you saw, if any, were the most surprising omissions from the nominees list.
Oh, my God. Break my heart into a thousand pieces. A film that was in my top 10 films of the year, not just docs, of the year, was American Symphony. Matthew Heineman's doc, it's the best thing he's ever done. It is wonderful, beautiful, about John Batiste, someone I thought I knew something about, realized that I knew nothing about him. American Symphony, it is incredible. An incredible film. But on top of that, my second favorite doc that I love so much was Beyond Utopia, which, my God, American Symphony didn't surprise me that it missed. I was genuinely surprised Beyond Utopia missed, because when I was tracking them all, that was the one. I said two of them I knew were going to make it. I said 20 Days in Mario Bowl and Beyond Utopia, and then Beyond Utopia missed. And then it became this whole other
thing. That to me in many ways was kind of shocked, but I could understand the reasons. And also it's a it could be categorized incorrectly, unfairly, I think, but as a music doc, and you've mentioned how that can be a handicap to make the nominees list. Yep. And as you mentioned about Still, a Michael J. Fox movie, you know, that won the Emmy, so it had that going against it. But Beyond Utopia didn't seem to have anything against it, and yet it didn't make the list.
Yeah, maybe it was just small movies that I think Magnolia distributed it, and you're just trying to make some noise. When I was tracking early on, Apollonia was tracking really, really well. That was doing very well internationally. So in the end, I ended up not predicting it, and I was right, but I think Apollonia was really, really close. The most surprising entry for me was Bobby Wan, and not because of quality. I feel like no one brought it up to me at all. So this is like one of those, like, you're having conversations with people and you just kind of don't know where it goes. I don't know if it's maybe the last thing they saw, or maybe I just didn't talk to that pocket of voters, but that film like hardly ever came up. It was wild that it made it for me. Even despite it doing very well precursor-wise, I just thought it was one of those that, like, it's Nat Geo, right? It's supposed to do well in the guilds.
Yeah, it seemed to get a bump when it won the IDA award, perhaps, and it was always that kind of long shot that in the background, and it just kept gaining momentum in the background.
But all in all, this isn't a bad list. Considering what missed, this is still a good list. Is it one of the all-timers? No, but so start with Bobby Wine. I think it's always hard to consider what, like, the five in a category. What's number five and what's, like, not happening? When I looked at its face, I said Bobby Wan would be not something that would break through.
And but for folks who haven't seen it yet or don't know about it, what is
Bobby Wan? Yeah, it's the harrowing depiction of Ugandan opposition leader, activist, and musical star Bobby Wan and his campaign to become president. It often helps when the person is alive, because then they get. He also wrote an original song for the movie that ended up not making the original song shortlist. I thought initially that was the last place contender, but as I think about it more and more, I think, and despite it winning the Indie Spirit yesterday, Four Daughters, I think, could be. It's Kauthar Ben-Hania, who did The Man Who Sold His Skin, with international feature a few years ago. Fascinating hybrid doc that depicts a Tunisian woman whose two eldest daughters were radicalized by Islamic extremists. It's actually a fantastic film. I love it so much. It is quintessential. At this time, not the right movie for the moment. I think, like, where Coda can be the movie of the moment and come at the right time, sometimes a movie is getting something at a time where people are like, I need something joyful in my life a bit, and Four Daughters is gonna be a little bit heavy. But
it's also pretty experimental as far as docs go, and, you know, your average Academy member may not be so inclined. I don't know. What do you think? I mean, it's outright Brechtian.
Yeah. It's funny. It is experimental, which is why it's even surprising that it made it. I thought actually it had a better shot to make it international feature because it was Tunisia's entry. I knew that gave it a leg up in documentary, but I thought ultimately in the end, the doc branch members would be like, yeah, no, I'm good. I don't want to do it. But they did. I think that just suffers for being at this moment. I don't think what the Academy at large appetite they're going to be looking for.
And I would just add, I also love this film. I really enjoyed talking to the director, Kauthar, about it. She has such an interesting aesthetic.
She's so passionate.
And, like, yeah, she's incredible.
I tell people, like, in this gig sometimes, I'm sure, Ken, you speak to a lot of filmmakers as well. A lot of times you meet people and you think to yourself, God, you lost the joy in what brought you here. Like, sometimes you're just like a grumpy McGrumperson. Just go get a hug, man. But she is still, like, phase one, like, you just gave her the key sort of first thing. Like, she loves filmmaking, and she's passionate about it. And I think she's going to be very, very dangerous, like, in this, like, whole sphere. She's going to be doing a lot of great stuff. I love what she's doing. But unfortunately, here, I don't think she's the one to possibly do it.
So you're putting that as your sort of longest dark horse this moment.
Yeah, right now, I think that's Bond. Moving up from that, then I go to Bobby Wine. Now, Bobby Wine, a little feel good. A lot of, you know, it's important in a presidential year, right? That should be helpful. But on the other side, maybe it's not very helpful because we may be witnessing the collapse of our democracy in some ways. So maybe, like, you know, we don't want to get into a movie about running for president right now. So much like Four Daughters, kind of movie of the time, may not really hit particularly, but Nat Geo are great campaigners. They know how to do this. They do it well, obviously proven by them getting in here. They just need a little, I think it needs a little more visibility. The same thing that happened during nomination period where I wasn't hearing anything about it still remains right now. I still don't hear people talking about Bobby Wine, which means maybe it's a winner. I don't know.
All right, what's next?
Moving up. You know what's funny? The next one is a movie that come out maybe 3 months later, I think would be the winner, and that's Eternal Memory. It's an MTV movie, documentary film movie from Maite Alberdi, who did The Mole Agent, which might be one of my favorite docs this decade so far. I love The Mole Agent. And I'm a sucker for simplicity. Like, bring me a simple, stupid story that, like, you're kind of like, what? And then entertain me for, like, an hour, 45 minutes, and, like, I'm on board. Like, she is fantastic. But this film, it's a celebrated Chilean couple dealing with Alzheimer's, which also serves as a meditation on the personal and political meanings of South American history. Maite, the way she is as a filmmaker, is also produced by Pablo Larraín. And I think a little bit of what kind of took this film off course, and this is like inside baseball, behind the scenes. If anyone noticed, on Oscar nomination morning, this was the one film that they said nominees to be determined. I don't know what happened there, but the only official Oscar nominee for the movie now is Maite, the director. They allow, I think, up to three people to be nominated. It's produced by Paul Rain, who did Spencer and Jackie. So I don't know what happened there. I think maybe a little bit of the campaigning wasn't able to really take off the way it could have, because there's got to be some type of debate that's going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of. So I think that's kind of what stalled it. But a lot of this is a classic I peaked too early. It was shoo-in early on, and I didn't think it was going to make it actually in the end, and then it did, but that was everlasting over the year.
I was thinking, you know, what if the doc branch voted on the winner? And I was thinking, if that was the case, I'm not saying it should be, but if that was the case, I actually think Eternal Memory could win it all, because I think a lot of folks in the doc branch would really like to see Maite win. A lot of Mole Agent fans, and this film is...
She's just so good about picking a subject and just making us revolve around their world. She brings people into a story not many documentarians have done. I'm looking through some of the past winners, you know, the last like decade or two, and there's nothing that really feels like her. And maybe that's a little bit of why she's not winning, because I always say sometimes people are ahead of their time. You know what? She has, I was thinking about this the other day. She feels like new age Kirsten Johnson in a very strange way. Like, there's just something about her that I'm just like utterly entranced by. I find myself hypnotized in her movies. I feel like she's doing a spell on me every time because I can't stop watching her films. And there's just something about it. Kirsten Johnson, same thing. Like, you know, Dick Johnson and his death didn't make it either. I think sometimes the Academy doesn't know what to do with it yet.
She's a true auteur in the doc field, and there aren't that many, I would say.
Yeah.
So that takes us to 20 Days in Mariupol and To Kill a Tiger, which also takes us back to the beginning of our conversation and the news about Netflix picking up To Kill a Tiger. So where do you fit these two?
Two, lack of a better term, two very depressing movies. In their own right. However, To Kill a Tiger is relentless. I love the movie so much. I think it's very, very powerful when it does. So it tells the story of an Indian farmer, Ranjit, who embraces the fight of his life when he demands justice for his 13-year-old daughter, the victim of a brutal gang rape. So I hate using this excuse sometimes when you're watching a movie, but if you're a parent, the movie hits different. I'm a father to a 13-year-old now. All I wanted to do was like scorch earth mentality, like just murder everyone. It's a movie I deeply appreciated. Probably one I would never watch again because it is just, it puts you through the ringer. Then you have 20 Days in Mariupol, which the final days of the Russian siege of the embattled Ukrainian city of Mariupol, now coming 2 years after Ukraine war has started. still very timely in the news, especially following the death of Navalny. It's there. It's the moment. It's right now. I'm pretty sure as soon as people heard that Navalny had died, probably popped in their screener and gave it a watch and said, I can't believe this is happening. And the day he won his DGA award, he was up there. I was in the room with him. He said, just today, they bombed my town and 7 people died and 3 of them were children. Like that, like what a burden, what it's going to carry. I think it just hit. I think people are going to know. They have to give him that moment on stage to tell the world what's happening. So get Congress to move their ass.
It also just won BAFTA, the best documentary.
It did win BAFTA. It lost the PGA to American Symphony, but I see American Symphony. He's not nominated. By the way, perfect example of a preferential ballot. American Symphony, Feel Good. I'm telling you, American Symphony was here, no question. They'd be running away with it because people would be like, oh, it's like, you know, even though, I'm not saying that's light material, battling cancer, but there's like a happy ending to it. Whereas this is like still happening and you're like, where do we go from here?
Well, speaking to that point, To Kill a Tiger, as hard as the material is, it does end with justice. And so in that sense, if you watch the film, if you get through the film, which is very well made, as it goes along, there's a court case and it ends with justice. Whereas Mariupol, you know, ends with tragedy, basically.
Yeah. And you know what's, I hate to simplify it in this weird way. Mariupol is 97 minutes long and To Kill a Tiger is 127 minutes. You know, yeah, Mariupol is a lot. But you're in and out, like you breathe after. To Kill a Tiger, you're like, I mean, listen, I was in it the whole time. I was obviously watching. They've done a great campaign, by the way, before Netflix even stepped in. I don't know, this is proof that Facebook is always listening to us again. But I used to see ads for To Kill a Tiger everywhere, like literally everywhere. So they have been getting the word out about their movie. But in fact, that's made it this far. I predicted that it would make it. It was like that little one flying on the radar. But I think it's between those two. But I think Mariupol just has a little bit of the yet. I'm telling you, I think something always remains to be said about how long an Academy member has to endure for something that's so heavy that's true. It's documented footage. It just isn't like a narrative that like, I'll never happen, obviously, but it's 3 hours and it's Killian Murphy. This is, I'm watching a father fight at nothing to avenge his family. And that is, for me, it's like, it does something different. But I think 20 Days of Mariupol probably has a slight edge.
Do you think Netflix coming in so late is, it seems like there's just not enough time to do any campaigning. Is that right? Or I don't really.
Time that we're talking, Oscar Rudy ends in 27 hours. There's nothing really you can do on that. I mean, you can try, but it's not always about awards. Like maybe it's just something that they feel like people are going to watch globally and they should. And I'm all for that. This is where, like, as much as people talk about streamers and like the crying, the end of cinema and all that stuff, when they do stuff like this, I tip my hat off and I'm like, thanks for coming in. Thanks for getting something like this out there. With American Symphony, I just want to tell you, right, it had no distribution yet. And then they came in and bought American Symphony. I'm pretty sure now that's got to be inarguably probably Matthew Heineman's most seen movie he's ever done. And hopefully it will open the door to more opportunities for him. Something I want to add, though, someone told me something about when I was trying to digest the Matthew Heineman snub thing. I was really annoyed by it. I had a doc person tell me, you know what I think it is? I think he makes too many movies. I said, I'm sorry. Like, I think he takes a break. He just worked on the next one. I was like, oh, he's a filmmaker. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that we had a limit. And there's something to be said that some people do make too many movies, but his succession of Cartel Land, Retrograde, the first wave. And now the dude is, for me, this is like our new Steve James. Like, he's going to do something huge. He has it in him. And I'm glad that he did this because coming off Retrograde and the first wave, I was like, I need Matthew Heineman here, man. Who can do that? And then like, let's tell about it. And then he went and did John Batiste and I think it helped him tons.
So here's a bit of trivia. I went through the list of Oscar winners. I think the last PBS documentary to win the Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature, could be wrong, please correct me, you know otherwise, but what I found was the 10-year lunch, the wit and legend of the Algonquin Round Table.
What year was that?
1987, Clayton. Ooh. It won the Oscar in 1988.
Look at it right now.
So they have had plenty of nominees, but they have not had a winner, I don't think, since 1988.
Yeah, we always have to remember now that I think it came in the mid-2000s or so that the entire Academy votes now, right? Entire eligible 10,000 people. But when you get to this point, then you look at mass appeal. But so we have five heavy subject movies, right? Then you're like, okay, what else can it be? What do you have to factor in? I don't think, like, if still had made it, if still had actually made it to the five, still would be winning. Because it's mass appeal. So once it gets to this point, then it's just something else. PBS doesn't have the budget, obviously, that like a Netflix has, but Netflix isn't doing the campaign for this, but they just got it 14 seconds ago. So now they're just trying to mount whatever they're going to do for it next time. But you know what? Now they're probably looking for Emmys with it and probably kill it at the Emmys.
And just to clarify, I don't think I mentioned that PBS Distribution is the distributor on 20 Days in Mariupol. And it was also a Frontline AP co-production.
But I'm good. Great lineup, heavy material, but no film I regret watching.
I think you've pointed out, as have others, that there maybe is a split between what the Academy as a whole would have picked if they had their druthers versus the Doc Branch. But these five films are certainly very worthy nominees. And I think people will be happy to see those filmmakers, whoever they are, come up on stage and have their moment, their golden moment.
You know what's interesting about this? You know, I said Four Daughters is probably last in this category. If it was just the branch voting, I think Four Daughters would actually be winning. Weird little thing we live in this world.
It is. Last question, which is, because we asked this last year, what was your favorite doc of the year? So what doc do you think is going to win the Oscar, but if you have a film that really stayed with you, what was your favorite?
I think it's at the top of the meeting here, but American Symphony was in my top 10 of the year. It was my number 6 film of the year. And I do every year for Variety, I do this thing called If I Had an Oscar Ballot, showing what I would have voted for. And my 5 would have been American Symphony, Beyond Utopia, Everybody, the focus features doc from Julie Cohen, which I loved, Little Richard, I Am Everything, Lisa Cortez, another music doc, man. Can't get arrested, man. Can't get arrested with these music docs. And then still, but I love 20 Days. I love Apollonia at Bologna. I love It Ain't Over, sports doc, but I'm also a Yankee fan, so sorry, guys. And I actually dug a lot of They Shot the Piano Player, the animated. I'm mostly just a sucker for animation, but I love the experimental documentarians. So I love Flea so much. Give me something that looks different, that, you know, tell me the same story, real people, but just all that. Love it. What would Chechnya, same thing.
I agree with you completely. And I would just add that of your top 5, we had interviews with all of those directors on Top Docs. And we have interviews with all of the Oscar nominated features and shorts. So check those interviews out if you have a chance.
Ergo, when I like something, don't interview them, please. I'm looking to get nominated.
No, it's definitely been an interesting year. You never know who's going to pull it out. We'll all be watching. Thank you once again for taking time out from your busy season, your crazy busy season, to be with us on Top Docs. Always enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks so much, Clayton. Take care.
Top Docs is a production of Woolly Media. This episode was produced by Ken Jacobson and Mike Merrill and edited by Mike.